I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are David Quantick, Granny Maguire, Vicky Stone and Luke Kempner. And this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you very much indeed. So, Simon Cowell's ratings really are in trouble, and I don't think it's surprising, because the X Factor format is being used everywhere. One person now has to leave the cabinet every week until the end of the parliament. Although, as compensation, it's possible that the Prime Minister might be able to use her current situation to develop a remake of a TV classic.
In 2017, a cabinet was appointed to rule the country, but proved so inept, vague and careless that one of them might have got a British citizen sent to prison for a crime they did not commit. Today, although still labeled a government, they all work independently for their own ends. If you have a problem, and literally no one else can help, and if you can find them and they're not on holiday, you can do what Theresa May seems to have done and hire the B-Team.
Now, the opposition have problems of their own, of course. John Prescott's son David was suspended from the Labour Party this week, and since his father punched someone in the face and got promoted, it's presumably something worse than that. It also turned out that party headquarters is rented from a company based offshore in Jersey, which must have been annoying for Jeremy Corbyn, since his views on corporate tax dodging are pretty consistent. And this week should have been an open goal, as the news seems to have been following big weekly themes at the moment. Last week...
sex.
This week...
money.
Next week...
drugs and rock and roll.
It was the week of the Paradise Papers, this year's sequel to the Panama Papers. A chance for the media to use stolen confidential documents to accuse people of things that are not illegal. Now, this made for a somewhat unsatisfying edition of Panorama, in which every scene ended with a reporter saying...
We should point out that this is not actually illegal.
Or saying,
of course, nothing here is technically illegal.
Or looking through the findings of the Russia inquiry and saying,
there is nothing illegal here, no collusion.
But there were some telling moments. An embarrassed-looking Lord Ashcroft was chased around the Conservative Party conference before he ducked into the toilets to escape. And it's not often you see a top Tory looking red-faced going into a public lavatory. But there it was. And the Isle of Man didn't come out of it too well.
Lewis Hamilton landed on the Isle of Man to avoid VAT on his jet and spent just 50 minutes there before leaving again.
Although, in his defence, that is plenty of time to see all the major attractions there. And it's true, isn't it? The public don't seem to care about these sorts of stories nearly as much as the media seem to think. I mean, it's not long ago that Gary Barlow and Jimmy Carr were both revealed to be avoiding tax. And yet Gary is still a much-loved songsmith, and when he was asked if it had affected his career, Jimmy Carr said... Jimmy Carr's laugh is amazing, isn't it? It's a natural phenomenon worthy of Attenborough.
This extraordinary sound of the comedian, Channel Fourius ubiquitous, as he realises that not only has he totally got away with it, but it'll be good material for which to build his act.
Now, becoming a tax haven is a good ploy for a small island without much economic clout. Jersey, Bermuda, Grand Cayman, Britain once we've left the EU. And apparently the Isle of Man began trying to attract tax-dodging companies in the 70s as tourism there declined, and it's now so entrenched that from next year, each of the three legs on the island's national symbol will be wearing a Nike trainer. The Isle of Man is also the inspiration for the island of Sodor in Thomas the Tank Engine, which I think they really ought to make more use of.
It was a sunny morning, and Thomas was pleased to see his friend Henry the Helicopter. "Hello, Henry," he said. "Oh, hello, Thomas," said Henry. "I can't stop. I'm only landing here for 50 minutes to avoid VAT. Thomas and the other ordinary engines seethed with rage as they couldn't avoid tax, which was why Jeremy the Red Engine was now ahead in the polls. "What's that noise?" said Thomas. "Don't worry, it's only me," said Pretty the True Blue Engine. "I'm being shunted off into a siding."
Of course, that's the thing about the Paradise Papers. It's an impressively wide-ranging affair. It's not every scandal that involves both Her Majesty the Queen and Mrs. Brown's boys. I mean, the Queen and Mrs. Brown are not easily confused.
No. One is a feisty old matriarch with a wacky extended family whose farcical escapades are inexplicably popular with the British public.
And the other is a TV sitcom about Mrs. Brown. All in all, though, nobody was particularly shocked to learn that people with lots of money try and minimise the amount they hand to the government. Although why they do it's not clear, since the trillions of dollars that multinationals and hedge funds are systematically removing from the world economy and putting into suspended animation in a vault somewhere are useless to anyone, including them, since it can't be spent, paid out or moved.
And that's why President Trump is trying to change the rules to encourage American companies to bring the cash back onshore. A policy so sensible, it's rather alarming. It also turned out this week his ramping up of the threat from North Korea may be similarly rational. It's a sales tactic, as he successfully has sold billions of dollars of defence missile systems to Japan.
I told the Prime Minister of Japan that the United States will not allow a giant prehistoric lizard to emerge from the sea and lay waste to Tokyo. We have a very, very good defence against mutant dinosaurs, and this week only, I can offer you a 10% discount.
But amidst all the fuss about the tax revelations, a survey on the BBC website showed that almost half the population say that they would do the same thing if they had the money, and that despite the manifest unfairness of the system, most people aren't surprised by any of it. Maybe it's too complicated or too dull. Perhaps it would help if it was one of those crimes they make glamorous all-star thrillers about.
One of you aboard this train is guilty of an act of tax avoidance. We must use the little grey cells to work out which of you is the perpetrator. We have the dashing young racing driver, Monsieur Hamilton, who strives to give the impression that all his money is held within a Santander 123 account. We have the obligatory old lady who claims to know nothing.
One is not involved with one's investments.
And yet, your son, he seems also to be involved, n'est-ce pas?
Look here. One doesn't have to put up with this. This sort of interrogation is not good for someone of my mother's age. It could be bad for her heart. Keep on going. Ask her more questions.
We have Monsieur Bono, which I have long suspected is not your real name. Et voilà! From the newspapers I learn that your real name appears to be Monsieur Pompous Hypocrite Bono.
Now, see here, we don't have to listen to this.
Ah, Madame Nike, named, I believe, after the Greek goddess of outsourced manufacturing. Your tax-dodging reputation is, of course, well known. As is yours, monsieur. So, which of you has brutally murdered the concept of social responsibility? The answer is all of you. Yes, this is not a spoiler. Everyone has seen the Albert Finney version a million times. All of you are guilty, but all of you will go free, unless, of course, Monsieur Corbyn here wins the next election. But that is too far-fetched even for me. My work here is done until this story comes around again next year. Au revoir.
And now, taking a break from performing a show, What Has the News Ever Done For Me? Would you please welcome Gráinne Maguire?
Hello. Now, I think at the moment it's a very exciting time to be a woman. We get to be Ghostbusters, Prime Ministers, and even present Strictly without a chaperone now. We haven't achieved so much since George Clooney finally agreed to marry one of us. Now, I am a feminist. Do we have any other feminists here? Ooh, I love being a feminist. Like, it's really important to me that I become, like, a really good feminist. Like, the best one. And it shouldn't be that hard, because my only other competition are women, so... Or, like, male feminists, or as we call them now, the accused. It's been 50 3 years since abortion became legally available in the UK. And I think it's just weird to have what is essentially a medical procedure decided by our laws. I mean, the only time we see male genitalia in the statute books, it's because a man's doodled them there himself. Abortion is still technically illegal in the UK. Currently, two doctors still have to sign off on the request. As outdated as that seems, the situation in Northern Ireland is even worse. There, it is completely illegal to have an abortion unless your life is at immediate risk. Now, Northern Ireland is that bit of Britain everybody's a little bit hazy about. They haven't had a government there since February of this year. To put that in context, there's been a whole Great British Bake Off cast change since then. And that's got a little bit more press attention. So it doesn't make sense because Northern Ireland is the trendsetters. They've had a weak government paralysed by infighting and factionalism way before we made it cool. Because I understand why women in Northern Ireland can be forgotten. It's not a very sexy region. It's not, it's true, the most glamorous thing to have happened to Northern Ireland was the Titanic. That was it. And by the way, Irish people get very defensive about the Titanic. When anybody mentions that to my mum, her response is always, "Oh, for God's sake, they had 5 good days. Because I'm a huge fan of the Titanic. Did anybody know that if you watch the film Titanic backwards, it's even more depressing? It's true, because then it's about a magical sea ship that comes to life and moves to Belfast. Like, you actually cry more when you watch it that way. And I do understand people's hesitations. Should Irish women have control over what happens to their body? I mean, you may think that is like a perfectly obvious thing, but I remember how crazy we all went for line dancing in the 90s. So, like, body autonomy may not just be right for us. Now, luckily, denying abortion rights is an issue that unites both sides of the Northern Irish community. Everyone hates women. That's the Northern Irish remake of Everybody Loves Raymond. People worry that if abortion is available in Northern Ireland, it will result in abortion on demand. Now, I'm not an expert on this, but I think it has something to do with Netflix. I think. Or, like, you know what women are like, that will just terminate pregnancies on a whim. You know, like during a lunch break or on a dare on a hen do. Because you know how flaky women are. Sure, at the start, we'd love being pregnant. But then, like veganism, Zumba, or Taylor Swift, in a few months we just won't be bothered anymore. Because obviously, ending a pregnancy is not a decision any woman ever takes lightly. And there are arguments on both sides. Like, for example, I don't like the idea of abortion being used as a form of contraception, you know? I'd rather those flighty, immature, irresponsible young women were forced to be parents instead.
Now, please welcome writer, author, and very good person to have on your team in the pub quiz when it comes to the music round, David Quantick.
Now we've got Guy Fawkes Day out the way, we can concentrate on Christmas. Once upon a time, Christmas was big and exciting and colourful. Tinsel and plastic trees and booze and music. The best music, like... When I wish it could be Christmas. And... The boys of the NYPD choir. And... But as the years have gone by, Christmas has become sort of bland. All beige and tasteful and sober. And the music is... Your heart's the world away. Ever.
And I wanna kiss you, make you feel alright.
So...
The power of love.
Slightly.
And you can tell everybody, this is your song.
Wet. Now, there are, I think, two reasons for this. The first is the music itself. Today's acts couldn't punch their way out of a Christmas cracker. If Noddy Holder found himself trapped inside a figgy pudding, he'd eat it to death. If Ed Sheeran found himself trapped inside a figgy pudding, he'd write a whiny song about it before your gran ate him. Now, today's pop music is many things, but it's not suited to Christmas. If I was Santa Claus and I heard this while coming down the chimney, I'd be back in my sleigh before you could say, cheer up, mate, it might never happen. Oh, it has. So how did all this music become so lame? Well, I blame the French. You see, in the noughties, some French people invented a new kind of music specifically designed to make the world a worse place. That music was called Nouvelle Vague, which is French for crap. Now, I like the French. France has given us great art and wine and cinema and someone to have wars with when the Germans are busy. But in the matter of Nouvelle Merde, they have done the world a disservice. Let's hear some before and after examples. I don't know about you, but listening to those songs again, I was on the edge of my sleep. I hate Nouvelle Vague, but it has been a clear influence on this. Now, this awful music would have gone away of its own accord, dribbling back into the River Seine like a decomposing Salvador Dali clock, were it not for one thing: ad agencies. I mean, Christmas adverts are bad enough as it is. They're all sentimental and meaningful, with bulldogs bouncing on an open fire and penguins teaching bears to play the piano and old men luring children to live on the moon. They're just awful. Tesco's advert is all about getting the perfect turkey to the table. As part of their campaign, everyone's welcome. Except, of course, vegetarians. John Lewis's campaign is being trailed as Under the Bed, which, if Under My Bed is anything to go by, suggests this year's ad is going to feature the adventures of an old lager can, an unread Martin Amis novel, and a ball of fluff the size and consistency of Boris Johnson. Meanwhile, Marks and Spencer have enlisted Paddington Bear as a cynical movie tie-in. I mean, cute, lovable, cynical movie tie-in. The M&S advert shows Paddington inadvertently helping a burglar return all the presents he's stolen to their rightful owners, in return for which the burglar gets a marmalade sandwich.
I'm home.
Did you steal loads of gifts for me and the kids?
Not exactly. I met a bear on the roof and gave all the presents back in return for a marmalade sandwich.
This is Brexit all over again, isn't it?
Only Lidl have focused on what's truly important at this time of year. A 60-piece oriental dipping selection for just £3.99. But everyone else's adverts can be described with just one short word. Twee.
Here we are, a humble stable, just as was foretold us.
Who are you who enter here upon such a cold December night?
We bring gifts for the infant child.
Baby Jesus.
No, but I'd love a soy latte. Oh, sorry, I thought you said baby Chino.
What gifts have you brought?
Well, there's a Kath Kidston pencil case, an ironic card with a kitten on it, and a discount voucher for a cornflakes cafe in East London.
Oh, that's lovely. Who did you say you were again?
Oh, we're the Twee Kings.
We kings of Orient are, bearing gifts we traverse afar, half a world away.
But of course, the centrepiece of crap at this time of the year, the real, as it were, dog in the manger, is the Christmas song. The John Lewis Christmas song. My only concern is that John Lewis have run out of awful, twee, dismal pop hits, and so they might be forced to take on real Christmas songs.
You're a bum. You're a punk. You're an old slut on junk. Lying there almost dead on a drip in that bed. You scumbag, you maggot, you cheap, lousy faggot. Happy Christmas, your ass. I pray God it's all lost.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
Well, it's been one whole glorious year since Donald Trump was elected president. And against all odds, we still exist. So I'd count that as a win.
Yes. And here's what she's made of it. Is author and co-founder of the UK Women's Equality Party and American citizen, Catherine Mayer.
Catherine, thank you for coming. You said in November 2016 that the future of gender equality depended on the result of the US election and that Trump would send it back to the dark ages. So how do you feel a year in?
Well, I do wish I hadn't been right. The Economist has done this unintentionally hilarious take on his first year, where they were really scrabbling about to look for positives, and the sentence appears in this high-minded piece, well, at least he hasn't started a war yet.
You worried, in a piece you wrote last year, that his election would legitimise his views on women, but after the Weinstein scandal, the opposite seems to have happened, and given his admitted sexual misdemeanours, why do you think the harassment scandal has left him apparently unscathed?
Trump's original defence tells you everything you need to know. He said he couldn't possibly be guilty because the women in question were too ugly to grope.
What a lovely man. So is there anything you like about him at all? Are there any positives for you?
Strange you should ask that. He is the best recruiting sergeant for feminism worldwide that there has ever been. We actually, at the Women's Equality Party, thought of making him a medal, saying, kind of to say thank you, we got 1,000 new members the first day after his election.
I mean, women do vote for him, though, don't they? What kind of woman votes for Donald Trump?
White women, sadly. Women were also the ones who were criticising Hillary, who were saying she didn't look presidential, and then looking at that orange thing and thinking that he did. You know, this is... I'm afraid turkeys do vote for Christmas.
And what do you think would have been different if Hillary Clinton had won? Oh,
this
apart
is
from
such
everything.
I was going to say, this is such a sad question. You know, we would not have been waking up every morning checking that the world is still there. We wouldn't be worrying about Twitter increasing its character count from 140 to 280.
So do you think anything will happen? Do you think he'll last the full term? Do you think he will be impeached?
If I've got anything to do with it.
Do you have anything to do with it?
Well, I do have a vote.
Yeah. And do you... Why do you think Melania never smiles?
The thing that people shout at us from building sites is, smile, darling, it may never happen. And in her case, it definitely has.
Thank you very much, Catherine Mayer. And since it is a year since the president was elected, here with some advice is Vicky Stone.
There's no better way to celebrate Donald Trump's first year than seeing his likeness appear in a beagle's inner ear. He's now as famous in America as
the great bald eagle. And no, I'm not still on about the ear-infected beagle. Now, Donald, I have some questions, like, is your wife a decoy? And do you really not know how much food to feed to prize koi? It's all a bit fishy, Donald, so I'll give you some advice. I'll try to stay productive, and I'll keep it all concise.
Okay, great, Vicky. I think I'm ready for you to explain it to me now.
Between you and me, it's not a very good plan to call Kim Jong-un Little Rocket Man. And unless you want people to complain, don't praise the crowd sizes in a hurricane. And whilst you're playing golf at Mar-a-Lago, making up the terms of a trade embargo, show the electorate what you earn, publish the details of your tax return, then people won't think you're a wheeler dealer, cos your face is the colour of an easy peeler. Held hands with Theresa May.
I'm the 45th president of the US of A.
It's not all bad, it's not all doom and gloom for US President Donald Trump, because it's a real skill to make 10,000 hairs appear as though they are in one club.
So, one Julie Briskman from Sterling, Virginia, shot to prominence in the United States this week after being photographed giving the finger to Donald Trump as his motorcade overtook her on a bicycle, and I believe she got fired as a result. So, we have asked our audience what is the most rebellious thing that they have ever done.
I left Yorkshire. My mother has never forgiven me.
Most rebellious thing you've ever done? I met with Israeli ministers and didn't tell Theresa.
When I was a member of the cathedral choir, I had sex with one of the choir mums on a National Trust property while we were supposed to be walking her dog.
I told my Sunday school teacher that my dad was a druid, so I didn't have to go anymore. And then just to make it clear, she's written, he's not a druid. So that's good. Thanks for that.
This is my favourite, though, Case. What's the most rebellious thing you've ever done? I'm not a rebel. I'm a Radio 4 listener.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Steve, for those. Thank you for listening. We're off to the Isle of Man for 50 minutes, and goodbye.
You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punk, Hugh Dennis, David Quantick, Bronya Maguire, Vicky Stone, Luke Kempner and Catherine Mayer. It was written by the cast with additional material from Liam Byrne, Jane Lammercraft, Ben Hillier, David Mays, Laura Major and Charlotte Pearson. The producer was Victoria Lloyd. It was a BBC Studios production.